All right, here we go. Overdrive off and running. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles McLennan, and Jonah Siegel's back in here from The Athletic. What's happening, boys?
I got to admit, I'm a disaster. Like, I went and got my eyes looked at 2:45, and they put those drops in them. I can't see. I can't see. Like, the light is bothering me. I feel like I got to put shades on here. It is. She said it would come out, like, within an hour, but, like, it's been an hour, and I'm, like, struggling, you know, depth perception, everything. It's a bit of a gong show right now.
Fire up the Bernie Lomax. Go. Put some glasses on and just sit in that chair. Prop yourself up.
Wasn't it Costanza who had the big glasses after the eye appointment? Am I remembering that wrong?
Yeah, that was when he got the wrong lenses, right? They sold them female lenses. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think so.
Or frames or whatever, not lenses, frames. Yeah. He had the female frames and he couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah, it's a battle. Like, I'm, you know, obviously I wanted to go through the process, and I need glasses now to read, I think, close. I think as you get older, it's like a one or a two. You need glasses. I could still see far, but in tight, things are starting to get a little fuzzy. So I'm like, I've got a little look at. And I'm like, I got to be out of there by 3 o'clock. I'm on air. And these drops are not, like, my pupils. It looks like I'm stoned or something. Like, I think, isn't that what, if you're stoned, your pupils are really big?
Yeah, they can be. Yeah, I think there's a lot of different reactions. Depends on the drug you're talking about.
I guess. I don't have a rich history with all of the drugs, but the eyes are, the pupils are dilated for sure.
All right, well, as long as you can talk, buddy. Close the eyes. Go Matrix for us if you have to. Just close your eyes for 3 hours and soak in the dulcet tones of Jonas Siegel.
I know.
He loves the Ilya Mikheyev signing. I'm sure he does.
Loves it, yeah. I saw people last night, and again, people not understanding, like, somebody was like, oh, he took less in the first year so the Leafs could fit under the cap. I'm like, it's an average, dummy.
Yes.
Like, it's not 1.1 so that he could fit under the cap for the Leafs. It's, you know, an average of the 2 years, and you're taking more in the second year nowadays. We're seeing the hump contracts because escrow is being, you know, pushed back. That's why, you know, guys who are signing 5-year deals or whatever, the money's in the middle of the contract. It's not at the front like we've seen in previous years, front-loaded deals, because escrow is still going to be really high this season. And this might be an abbreviated season too, where you're only going to make 60% of your salary. So why not be low?
Yeah, it's the smart play.
Front year? It is
exactly.
The front.
And it doesn't affect any fans. I mean, it doesn't matter how much money is in the pocket of Ilya Mikheyev. What matters is the cap hit. And it's about $1.65 million for the next 2 years.
Well, and it's going to depend on how good he is. Like, I don't know where you guys stand. It's so hard to say. Like, 39 games, he looked really good in stretches, especially, like, right before he got hurt when he was playing with Tavares. You're like, man, this guy could be really something. Like, he could be someone who can score. He can play physically. He's a good skater. He's a good penalty killer. But who knows? But either way, like, worst case, what is he, a third liner? Like, either way, it's a cap win for them.
Even if he's a fourth liner, it might be a bit rich at 1.6, but it's not like he's signing a 4-year deal at 3.2. Like, he hasn't jammed up the organization. Let's say he's a third line left winger. That's pretty good value at 1.6 if he can give you 15 to 20 goals. And you know, if he plays anything like he played 30 out of those 39 games, you look like you got a pretty decent player there.
I don't buy into this thing that he took less.
No, he didn't take less.
I don't know. Rich to me.
I think it's actually the right play. And it was his agent that said it, I believe, Dan Milstein.
Yeah.
And it's the greatest play, and every agent should do it, even if it's completely ridiculous.
Right.
And like,
it's so transparent, though.
It's so transparent. It's so bogus. It's not true. Like, okay, maybe you could have taken money in the KHL. Go ahead. Go play there.
But that's the other thing.
Go roll the dice over there. Go ahead.
You weren't getting more money to play in Montreal
or
Pittsburgh.
But the KHL has a cap. Like, even that Yeah, that doesn't happen.
There'll be
that's
a guy
true.
With a. There's a guy with a tracksuit that'll give you money if you want.
In a
but
briefcase?
Good luck getting that money from the rink to your apartment safely without right. having to run into another guy in a tracksuit or a leather coat. So, yeah. like, take your life into your own hands over there. Here, I think you know, goes runs through the bank. It seems like it's somewhat normal.
Well, and it, again, I think it's the PR move of yes. the cap era, and it's the smart play. Even though I don't think the majority of people are going to believe it, that Ilya Mikheyev, after everything that's already happened, now he's concerned with making sure that nobody else gets dealt. Meanwhile, Kasperi Kapanen's in Pittsburgh already.
The night before arbitration, too.
Yeah.
He had a
and
change
Janssen's
of heart.
In New Jersey. But, you know, yeah. I like the PR play. I know it's bogus, but I would say it, too. If I'm an agent, I'm like, oh, he took less.
Okay.
Because whatever, all you need is one person to believe it, and you're like, hey, why not? Just go for it.
Who could we think of, and not just, I'm not going to take shots at Nylander or Marler, but like who could you think of that would absolutely be the most ridiculous thing to say? Like Patrick Mahomes' agent saying, you know what, like we left some money on the table here because, you know, we really want to shape this team and have them build around him. Like that's the type of ridiculous comments that an agent would say.
They say it all the time. McDavid's agency said it, I think.
But wasn't that actually
Jeff
factual?
Jackson
that was factual. Wasn't
no,
it?
Sounds like it was.
It was. Let's not. Don't you two start with that garbage, okay? What it was, I remember at the time saying, "What a brilliant move in terms of PR to get out in front and say." You know what? We decided that this was the right nut. Because in retrospect, it's an unbelievable deal to lock up McDavid for 8 years.
Yeah.
Now, the cap's not going up. I'm sure they were hoping that 12.5 would look even better by now and in a year and 2 or 3 years down the road when the cap was maybe going to get up over $90 million. It would have just been the epitome of a value deal for the best player in the world. But I think maybe they negotiated and came back down a couple hundred grand or something. But it was more about the PR and the optics. And I remember saying at the time, it's a brilliant move.
Right.
Like, it's a brilliant move because fans, they love you anyway. They love you even more if you give off the impression that you're Robin Hood.
Yeah, committed to the team.
Committed to the team and the market, and I'm not going anywhere. Like, and that's why to dig up old graves, and Marner in particular, because he's a Toronto guy, like I just kept watching Mitch Marner and his camp go through the negotiation wrong, 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 because I'm like, guys, the market is turning on you here.
Mm-hmm.
This would be so easy to take the 10-5 instead of 10-8.
Right.
And say, you know what? I just want it over with. I love being a Leaf. Let's do it. And people would be like, oh, what an incredible, you know, specimen.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You know, name City Hall after him.
Right.
It's, you know, it's that easy. Now, it's not my 300 grand per year. I get it. You know, 300 grand is 300
times
grand.
Times 6 years. Yeah.
Yeah. And that adds up. I understand
couple
it. And
million.
I think some of it was I want to get as close to 11.5 or 11 as possible because of Matthews and Tavares. But the PR, like, it would have been so easy for Mitch Marner to get a win. Sign a deal when it was on the table for 10-5, and those were the reports that was out there, 10-5. Or if you want to sign an 8-year deal, it's like 11 or whatever it was.
Right.
Take it. You're still making a fortune. You're still overpaid based on what Point got, Kachuk got, Rantanen got. And you could have just been a hero. You could have played up the hero mode. I don't want any problems. I love the boys. I don't want anyone to go anywhere. But instead, it had to be fight, 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 not showing up at camp, 10.8932476, like to the last cent. And people are like, I'm done. Like, I can't do this anymore.
No,
and
you're right.
I think McDavid was like, hey, float this out. And they love me anyway. It's going to go that much further.
I'm going to, all I can remember, and I want to go through this exercise because I remember the McDavid thing. I think what people were pointing out, and Jonas, you can weigh in on this. I'm sure you wrote about it. Is McDavid could have gotten more based on the percentage of you're allowed like up to
20%.
Yeah,
right.
Of course he could have.
He could have gotten 13.25 or something.
Yes,
that's what
I remember. What it was.
I remember there was a report that it was done. And it was 13.
Right.
Am I remembering it wrong? 13.25. And then like a few days later, they're like, no, actually, it's 12. Whatever. Isn't that what happened?
Yeah,
12 and a half.
Something along those lines. But let's not pretend like he took $4 million.
Well,
no.
So that you know, Jujhar Khera could make $3.5 million.
you're right.
Or but that, but that Cassian could make $10 million.
But well, that's Tavares here, right? There was the whole he took a discount, and now he's.
Which he didn't take a discount.
He didn't take a discount. He's like the fifth highest paid player in the league.
Exactly. He didn't take a discount.
Like Stamkos is a discount. Like Stamkos is a discount.
Right. Yes. But there was reports, again, I'm not confirming them because I wasn't behind the scenes, but that San Jose was offering a bigger number to Tavares.
But that doesn't mean this is a discount. That just means somebody else was going to pay you more.
Like he took technically, though. If we want to be sticklers, he technically took less than he was being offered. He didn't take the highest offer. He took the offer that he wanted. So technically, if you want to be sticklers, he left money on the table. If it was all about
That's
money,
fine.
He left money on the table.
Don't call it
to
a discount, though. It's not a discount.
He could have made more somewhere else. That was the difference. Now to when you look at Stamkos, I think Stamkos could have made more.
Yeah.
People factor in the tax situation and the comfort of going home. And listen, the guy chose the right place. He's on the Stanley Cup tour right now. Every time you turn around, you see a picture of Stamkos with the cup, which is, you know, he chose the right place. But I think Tavares, it was that he left money on the table. He didn't take a discount. That's a difference.
Yes. Technically, he could have made more with another team. Now, I don't know if that other team has ever confirmed it, but I would assume that Tavares' camp made sure that everyone knew it and that it was out there. But it was
right. It
doesn't mean that, you know.
Hey, you're onto something. You're onto something, though. This is great advice for agents.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Every time.
They should do it every single time. Travis Dermott will sign for $900,000 tomorrow and say, just discount, you know, how to do it. And, you know, I could have made three somewhere else, and there was an offer sheet on the table, but I didn't even look at it. And I just, you know, it's a brilliant move. It really
is.
Because people in this era want, and I want to believe it. Like, I want to believe that guys are thinking about the team and thinking about the cap, but I'm also not naive enough to believe that that's the truth, nor do I believe it should be their priority.
No.
Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not insinuating that any player should be charitable for everyone else or should trust that the GM's going to spend the money appropriately. I have no issue with any player going into negotiation and looking for the money. But with that is going to come some criticism if it goes wrong or it goes south or it gets sticky or whatever. So don't complain about people being fans or fickle or irrational or having some sort of a thought on the way it all plays out. So, you know,
well,
I got
to
think about the whole picture.
With Marner, like, that's still brought up, and it will probably continue to be brought up unless they win, right? That they've had to sacrifice pieces. It's not his fault. Like, he got what he got.
Yeah.
But there is a price, and you're right, for PR's sake, you'd almost be better off. Like, remember how beloved he was coming off that, I guess it was the third year?
The 94 point season.
Yeah, like
or
it
the
was him.
And, or whatever.
Yeah, like he was arguably the most popular player on the team.
Yeah, well, you got Bruce Cassidy going. You know, we're circling that guy. Like we're, you know, like and as my, all due respect to Matthews, remember it was Cassidy that was like, we're worried about Marner.
He was awesome in that playoff. Yeah,
he was. But you know, Mitch earned a contract. That's it is what it is. But I still have a tough time as a player. I don't want my agent saying anything out there. I really don't. I know Dan Milstein is a good guy and he's out there saying, hey, we took money, you know, less money to stay in. I don't want my agent having a narrative, you know, out there. Like it just, I don't know. I guess the way I work, I was with Newport Sports for many years. Pat Morris was my agent. Like you don't see Newport, nothing. There's a cone of silence from Newport. And Pat Brisson works that way. You know, other agencies don't. Alan Walsh is front and center. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, he's got to weigh in on everything on Twitter and you know, post pictures of his clients getting stabbed in the back with the, you know, with harpoons.
That's an all-time
swords.
Move.
I don't, I, you know I what, st- as
I can't
much
believe
as I like
Fleury's
Alan.
Still there. I can't believe Fleury is still in Vegas and is still going to remain in Vegas, you know, by
well, they
all
have
counts.
To. The other guy's had surgery. Like, the other guy may not be ready if the season starts right away. I know it's a little cleanup, but there's no guarantee that that, you know, Robin
Leonard. No, Robin Leonard might not be, but they're committed to him for 5 years. And right. Fleury's got 2 years left at seven, or
seven.
Whatever it is.
At seven.
So,
yeah.
Like, is he really going to just wrap up the contract in Vegas?
I don't know.
I can't picture that. I mean, I would assume the reason he hasn't been shipped out is because Vegas can't find a market for him. Like, no one wants to pay the price, and no one wants to give them cap relief.
The market went so quickly. The minute that Markstrom was not going back to Vancouver, signed in Calgary, then Vancouver was like, we want Holtby. And then it was like musical chairs, Grice goes here, you know, Mike Smith goes back to Edmonton. All of a sudden, there's no – where's the seat for Marc-Andre Fleury right now? Chicago, I would say. That's probably, you know –
Yeah, but they're tanking now, so they're not interested in Marc-Andre Fleury.
I don't see a spot for Marc-Andre Fleury right now.
No. How about
that's
for,
$7 million.
How about for Antonio Brown? See, this report, Adam Schefter reporting – because he's suspended through week 8, which I just lost all track of Antonio Brown news.
Right.
You know, I don't know what this guy's up to. I don't know where he's at. I will say it's been quiet on his front for a while. Haven't seen him on Twitter or Instagram or anything. And maybe that's because he's actually in the gym and he's working on his game and he's prepared to return. But his suspension's up as of week 8, which would be in about a week and a half. And it sounds like Seattle is all in, among other teams. So the Antonio Brown show is going to return to the NFL. It's just a matter of time. And I'm not surprised because of the talent, right? Like, his talent and his production is off the charts. The sideshow from when he bolted on Pittsburgh, remember week 17, the guy just didn't show up? Like, just didn't show up. Like, and it was a meaningful game. It was a must-win for Pittsburgh. Not there, doesn't show up. They ship him to Vegas. He never plays a game for Vegas.
And didn't he, like, screenshot, like, a conversation with a coach and put it out there?
Him and Gruden. He was recording Gruden.
Yeah. Like, it just – some gutless things
by
him.
Some of the craziest downfall and just spiraling out of control. I don't think he got his guaranteed money either. Like, he was – he was supposed to make, like, $30 million or something, and I think they basically filed a grievance and – I don't remember where that landed, but I don't think he made nearly as much money as he was supposed to. Pittsburgh still had to pay him because they basically just got rid of him. They're like, you got to go.
Right.
And even though it's guaranteed money and it's dead cap, you cannot be here anymore. And clearly they have moved on, and they're in a much better position. But someone's going to take a gamble on Antonio Brown.
Well, like,
it is happening.
What do you think Seattle's thinking? They're thinking, we have Pete Carroll. We have Russell Wilson. Like, our locker room is strong enough to handle this. Like, we've had Marshawn Lynch, who's a bit of a character. What do you think they're thinking?
Yeah, clearly I think they're thinking we have a strong enough culture, although New England thought that too.
Yeah.
Right.
New England had Belichick and Brady, and he lasted like a week and a half.
Yeah, Belichick wasn't having that.
No, you're out of here. And he was doing some stuff that wasn't, like, it wasn't even Belichick. It seemed like it was someone further up the chain, like Bobby Kraft.
Yeah, I think Bobby Kraft got involved.
Well, didn't Tom Brady want Antonio Brown?
Treatment and, what's that?
Didn't Tom Brady want Antonio Brown? Wasn't that part of the story?
No, all these quarterbacks want him. Russell Wilson wants him. Like, over the offseason, Lamar Jackson was working out with him. Like, every quarterback in the league, they don't care about what you're doing on Instagram or on Twitter, or what you're doing away from the stadium. If you show up and you can play and help them with their legacy, you're all in. And that's I would assume that's the story here, is Russell Wilson is on a full court press because he has been maybe shortchanged in terms of the talent that they've surrounded him with. You know, like, he's kind of like Brady in his last couple of years in New England, like Aaron Rodgers. He's got DK Metcalf now, who is a legit top five threat in football in terms of a wideout. But you add Brown to that, they're already 5-0. Russell Wilson's putting up, you know, MVP type numbers. The NFC is wide open. You know, if someone wants to go and take it, there's a Super Bowl appearance waiting for you. And this is the ultimate gamble, I think, boom or bust, because you are 5-0. You're proving you don't really need Antonio Brown. But if you add him and he's Antonio Brown from 3 years ago, you may have just solidified yourself as the best team in the NFC.
Well, how good does a guy have to be for you guys to take a chance on all that other stuff? Like, remember with Terrell Owens, it got to a point where you're just like, nah, not worth it.
Well, the guy's working out in his driveway. And his
that
agent's
was the point.
Doing,
yeah.
Yeah, his agent's doing an interview. This guy's doing crunches in his driveway. You know,
that was a good move.
It was. I mean, I don't know. There's always players, and I've played with a few that were troubled, you know, had either substance abuse issues or off-ice issues and stuff where the talent was great, but eventually, you know, the circus that comes with you outweighs what you bring to the team. Clearly, that's with Antonio Brown, that's not – he's still going to get a job. So teams are like, we'll take, you know, the nonsense because we want that production. The minute the guy can't play, he, you know –
And that's what happened with Terrell Owens. Yeah, T.O. Yeah. was done by then. Like, he was at the end of his career anyway, and he had lost a step or two, and then it wasn't worth it. Right. And Antonio Brown's not going to get some massive deal. He'll get a bonus-laden deal, I'll bet, where if you play the games, if you make the catches, right. load up on touchdowns, we'll pay you. And if you're a problem, you know, there's the door. See you later. You know, like, we'll cut you in a heartbeat. And that will right. come with the understanding. So we'll see. We'll track that. We'll get into it later this afternoon. Tim Kirkchian coming up from ESPN. Game one of the World Series in the books. Dodgers went off. The bats came alive. Glasnow could not close the door. And we'll see what Tim Kirkchian has to say about that. We'll tee up game two with him. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Tim Kirkchian coming up from ESPN. Game two of the World Series tonight. The Dodgers bats came alive. And Mookie Betts, Cody Bellinger, they went off last night, and that Bellinger celebration, man, that's got to stick for the rest of his career, right? He's got to do the foot tap with every teammate. He can't go back to the shoulders. He can't go back to fist bumps, high fives. That's his. He owns it. No one's ever done the foot tap. It's a great move.
And he's the MVP, is he not? Like, he's been putting a clinic on.
Mookie's getting a lot of love. Mookie's getting a lot of love.
So Mookie's your guy then right now?
Yeah. Or Seager. Seager's got it. Well, it's too early. It's one game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Seager was the NLCS MVP. He had five or six homers.
Yeah, throughout the playoffs, Seager, like, that lineup is nuts.
It's disgusting.
Like, nuts. The fact that they got Mookie and Seager and Bellinger, they don't even hit 1-2-3. They move Bellinger back in the lineup just to kind of spread out the wealth. They are so loaded, so good. And that was a big one last night, to no one's surprise. And I think Tampa's got to get one tonight. You know, I think Snell's got to put on a clinic. I think Cash has got to get to that bullpen a little bit quicker if need be. Got to win tonight. You can have 2-0 against this Dodger team. You're in big trouble. And to tee up game two of the World Series and look back on last night, we're joined now by ESPN MLB author and analyst Tim Kirkchian. How you doing, Tim?
I'm well, fellas. How you doing?
We're doing very well. It's been a very strange year for everyone in 2020, but we're supposed to have the World Series in October with some fans in the building. Did it feel somewhat normal for you last night compared to other World Series in the past?
Nothing felt normal this year, but the games have been really good, and October has been great. Now, it's not as great as when there are 50,000 people in the stands. I mean, I did games remotely, and I just kept asking myself, imagine what this place would be like. Doesn't matter what the stadium is, if there were 50,000 people screaming at this moment, and you're not going to replace that with no fans or even a few fans. So yes, that part was missed, but baseball has made a remarkable recovery from where it was in, say, the middle of July. And to get to this point, I think it's a tribute to everyone involved that somehow they pulled it off, and I think we're all thankful for that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a great ride. The two game sevens over the weekend were hopefully going to be a sign of things to come in the World Series, but it was rolling that way through about three innings last night, and then the Dodgers decided we're going to have enough of that, and they took off. And now the story today and the story postgame was Glasnow sticking in and throwing 112 pitches, and why didn't Cash go to the bullpen a little bit earlier? How did you feel about the decision live, and how did you feel about the decision after Cash explained it postgame?
Well, I was confused. First off, Kevin Cash is really good at this, not just being a manager, but making pitching changes and having a feel for when a guy is ready to come out and when he should stay in. And having said that, I was confused why Glasnow would even come out for the fifth inning last night. He threw 30 high leverage pitches in the fourth inning and really struggled. He must have bounced a dozen balls last night. And even though he's 6'8 and young and was still throwing 98 miles an hour, he just didn't look like the same guy to me. He didn't look sharp. And that game was 2-0, 2-1. And I'm still surprised with that deep, versatile bullpen that he left him out there for 112. Glasnow's never thrown 112 pitches in any start. No Ray has thrown 112 pitches since 2018, and no pitcher has thrown 112 pitches in this postseason until Glasnow last night. So it just broke from the plan that they've had with their other pitchers. They took Charlie Morton out after 66 pitches. But to second-guess Kevin Cash is really not a smart thing to do. But I also didn't totally buy his explanation after the game. So this happens. This is the beauty of baseball. We can sit the next day and discuss this all day long.
Well, Tim, that was what was so confusing is you watched over the weekend, Charlie Morton comes out with like 60-some-odd pitches, and he's rolling. And you're thinking, oh, and this was just after Blake Snell had been pulled and was not happy. What do you think actually did happen? Do you think he just, I don't know, like what do you think actually happened with Kevin Cash that he would kind of let it change so drastically?
Well, when he really got in trouble in the fifth inning, there's no doubt he needed a strikeout. This is what Kevin Cash said, and he said he was the best pitcher on our team to get a strikeout at that point, especially after the double steal and the runners at second and third, and he didn't get a strikeout. But Glasnow did have the highest strikeout rate of any starting pitcher in the big leagues this year. He had over 14 per nine innings, and his stuff was still good, but he wasn't locating it properly. But that was the explanation for why he stayed in. And let's not hide the fact that they're going to need that bullpen. If they're going to win this series, they're going to need that bullpen to work an awful lot, and maybe didn't want to blow it out in game one, but game one is really important in this series, especially how good the Dodgers are. And again, I'm surprised he didn't go to that pen earlier.
With Tim Kirkjian, MLB on ESPN analyst. So you wake up today, and it's the beauty of social media and talk radio, sports radio, we're all a part of this, is because Mookie Betts is playing, that means he's better than Mike Trout, who's not playing, right? Because we get to watch Mookie make all these incredible catches and, you know, run the bases the way he does and hit the ball the way he does. He's a spectacular player, and he has been for a number of years. Mike Trout is the victim of recency bias. But there seems to be a fair amount of people, reputable people, baseball lifers, pushing this idea that Mookie is as good as Trout, if not better. Is it a reasonable debate, and how do you feel about it?
It's reasonable. Mike Trout's the best player in baseball, period.
Yep.
Mookie Betts is a better defensive outfielder than Mike Trout, who's very good, by the way. He throws better than Mike Trout, who throws well. And he runs the bases, maybe not as fast, but he runs the bases better than Mike Trout. But Mike Trout is still the best player in the game. But last night and this postseason has proven why, over the last 5 years, if you're picking a second best player in baseball, I think it has to be him, given the overall game that he plays. I mean, not only hit a homer last night, but he stole two bases in one inning. And then the base running play he made, getting a great secondary lead, a great jump off a third, and scoring on a one hopper to the first baseman. Maybe five guys in the big league score on that play. Maybe five. But Mookie did with relative ease because he's such a smart player. And that's the part that people miss, is what a student of the game that he is and a leader in so many different ways.
So I'm with you on that, and I've been a believer in that for a couple of years, that, you know, Trout is clearly number one. I think Mookie Betts is number two, absolutely. But where would Seager come in on that list, and where would Bellinger come in? Are they top 10 guys, top 15? I mean, how much talent does this Dodger team have at this point?
Well, the way Seager has played in this postseason, he's a top 15 player, because this is ridiculous that a shortstop of this size can play that position as well as he does defensively. And he hit five homers in the LCS. No shortstop had ever hit four homers in a postseason series. He hit five. That's how good he is. And the three walks he took last night just shows you he's spitting on pitches that he wants no part of, and that's a hard thing to do, especially in this day and age. As for Bellinger, I mean, he's had a couple of really good games here now, back-to-back. He had really had some World Series struggles until last night, won for his last 24, 13 strikeouts, no RBIs, but he hit a big home run last night. And let's not forget, he is still the reigning MVP of the National League. And his 2019 season was a joke how good that was. And he won a Gold Glove. He is a freak athlete who is showing that not just at the plate. He's way faster than people think, and he's a tremendous defensive center fielder.
Well, and Tim, I think with Seager, people forget that he was like fifth, I think, in MVP voting a few years back. So that kind of makes me want to ask you, the Dodgers obviously spend lots of money, but I do feel like they've kind of unlocked something. Like they've got Gavin Lux, who people think is maybe the best prospect in baseball, second best prospect in baseball. Like what have the Dodgers done to kind of get themselves to this point where they are such a juggernaut like Hayes is talking about with all these stars?
Well, what they've done is they've shown remarkable patience by not trading any of their top prospects, Gavin Lux and a few years ago, Will Smith, who can really hit, by the way. Mm-hmm. And they hung on to all those guys knowing they are the future of the team. This is the strength of Andrew Friedman, who runs the baseball operations. He knows a good young player when he sees it, and he's just not dealing with them. And he waited. And he waited and waited, and people said, what are you waiting for? Well, he was waiting for Mookie Betts to come along, and then he got him. And he was not going to trade his best young players, and this is why the Dodgers are in such a great position now and moving forward, because their general manager, the guy who had to show so much impatience in Tampa Bay, showed the same patience in L.A., and now is in a position where this team should be good for a long time.
With Tim Kirkchin, before we get you out of here, I want to pose you a question about the postseason, which is only about a week away. And once the offseason starts, we're going to find out how much money is going to get splashed around and how much you'll be waiting for Marcus Stroman, who we obviously have a connection to up here in Toronto. And Mark has been pretty active on Twitter the past couple of days, calling out Cashman in New York and calling out the Yankees staff and saying that he's going to have a 3.5 wins above replacement year in, year out, if not better than that the rest of his career. And his numbers are what they are. He's got a 3.76 lifetime ERA, and a lot of those innings are in the American League East. But he's also had a bit of a yo-yo career. He goes up and down in terms of season over season. So what kind of market would you project for Marcus Stroman? How many teams are going to be out there, and how much money could we be talking about for Marcus?
Well, I love that kid, and he could pitch for me any day. Let's be clear about that. But I'm not sure about any free agent coming out this year because so much money was lost by the owners, and they're acknowledging how much they lost, that I'm just not sure how much there's going to be left for somebody other than Trevor Bauer, George Springer, JT Real Muto. It's going to be, I think, and I hope I'm wrong, a very difficult winter for a lot of free agents because the owners are going to say, we don't have any money for you guys. Sorry, you became a free agent at a bad time. Now, I think Marcus Stroman will get a multi-year contract, but he's not going to get anywhere close to what he would normally get because, again, the finances are just so far down right now. And I checked with someone the other day about the free agent market, and he goes, I have no idea. This is a guy in the business. He works for a club. He said, I have no idea where this is going, and neither does anybody else.
Yeah, that's not what free agents or agents are going to want to hear, and maybe GMs for that matter, right? They might want to spend some money and bolster their lineup, and the owners may just not allow it to happen. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Game two tonight. It should be fun. Enjoy it, and thank you for doing this, Tim.
Okay, guys. See you.
Tim Kirkchin from ESPN. Yeah, Marcus Stroman is he's got to be careful, man. I don't think he's helping himself, you know, popping off about Cashman and the Yankees. And
he's very unlikable. There's another guy that just it brings it upon himself. He's unlikable. And like, even though, like, he's a really good player. But
his numbers are quality. Like, again, he's got a 3.76 ERA lifetime and a lot of those innings, again, in the American League East. Like, he can pitch. We all know he can pitch. But he is not a Cy Young contender, right? He's not a guy that's won before. Now, that's a lot of based on the surroundings. And he might argue I was there at 15 and 16, which he was.
Right.
But I just think, you know, if the tipping point is, you know, this guy is just going to – is not someone who's called out a bunch of people, and this guy has, then he might lose out on that. And
sure.
He's also – you know, there's a difference between confidence and bluster. And when you keep saying you're this, and I'm going to do this, after a while, it's like, No, I don't think you're actually going to do that, Marcus. No, like, we don't need to hear all the time exactly about how you're just getting better and you're going to be the best. And it's like, no, you're not. You are who you are. He is who he is, and that's not going to change. He's already in his prime, if not at the back end of it.
Yeah, I've never been a fan of the way he conducts business. And maybe he's a smaller guy, so he feels he needs to act bigger. He's just a good player. And you know, own that. Just be confident. But just everything he does sometimes just kind of I don't know what the right word is. It's not arrogance. Is it a touch of arrogance,
well,
I guess?
It's a chip on your shoulder, yeah, but to the point where it's we get it, but just, you know, go out there and perform and go out there and play. Like every year we heard it in Toronto was, I'm going to dominate this year. I'm going to be the best this year. And then he wouldn't be the best, right? Like, he's not up for the Cy Young.
Just lip service.
But
he's unlikable doing it. That's the thing. I'd rather root for the guy, but because of the way he conducts himself, you almost root against him because you're like, I want to see this guy fall on his face because he acts like a jackass.
I'm curious to see what kind of market's going to be out there for him.
You think the NHL market was that different? Like, I didn't
massively
think,
different.
Did you think so?
Taylor Hall signed a 1-year deal, Jonas.
But then you had
in
some
Buffalo.
Guys. Yes, he's the exception. But like, was the Chris Tanev deal that different from what you thought it would be? Jacob Markstrom, was it that different from what you thought it'd be? Like, some of the contracts were.
I think the good players got what they deserved, but I think where.
Not the great player, though, right?
Where the market was different, Jonas, was the mid-level players. That middle tier, there's no year. I think the money's still there. I think the years are not there. Hmm. Like, there's managers that would give guys, you know, 3 or 4 years at $3 million a year. I don't see any of those. Like, I saw 1 and 2 years. Like, we went through the numbers that Kevin Gibson put out. Like, the term on most of
close.
The guys' deals,
it's
wasn't
not even
close.
Like, the first 6 hours of free agency, year over year, like, just way down in terms of total money, years. It wasn't even close.
I think also where I think the NHL missed the boat is I like that the interview period. Because that way you saw a buildup. Like, 5 days, guys could go in. Now, right, with COVID, you can't go to those cities. But you could be talking to those teams leading up to free agency. So you would know where the marketplace is going to be set. The marketplace was starting to be set right on free agency day. So you're looking at players like Mike Hoffman. What's his marketplace right now? Like, he's a really good player.
Yeah, he is.
He doesn't have a job.
And he's not. I don't think he's going to get a ton. I mean, I know his agent keeps saying that there's handful of teams in on him, which I don't dispute. Like, there'd be teams, you'd be silly not to call on him if you need goal scoring, if you need help on the wing or whatever, he can play. But I think you look at a couple of the contracts that stick out as very strange. Like, Dadonov's a good player. I think he took everything he could get and he had to go to Ottawa. You know, like, it was like, I guess.
He took a discount.
That's the best it wasn't a discount, though.
Said it's a discount.
His agent would have said that. I'll bet you there were better teams. I would guess. I don't know this, but I would guess a pretty good team, if not very good team, said, we can give you a 1-year deal. You know, that's what we can give you. And he's like, no, I need term and money. I'm up. I'm 30 or 31. I want what I can get. It's like, I guess I'm going to Ottawa. And I think there's some similarities there with Hall. Like, you know, let's not forget, Hall had the opportunity to extend in Jersey. He turned that down. He could have extended in Arizona, we believe. He turned that down.
Yes.
So, you know, he got hit from COVID. He didn't know it was coming. But then it feels like it's like, I got to get something. Even if it's a 1-year deal, I can't sign for 4.5. Like, who can give me 8? And Buffalo was maybe one of only a few teams that would. And they could.
I think there would have been other teams that probably could have gotten close to that number on a 1-year deal.
Yeah.
But. To your point, Brian, like, there was no 7-year deals being handed out day one, you know, and times 10 guys.
Yeah, that's true. But like, maybe teams are getting – no, they're not. I was going to say maybe teams are getting smarter, but maybe
no,
not.
No, they're not. If COVID didn't hit, there would be a couple of contracts that got – like, guys that got 7 years where you're like, are you serious?
Like the Okposo, Ladd, kind of Lucic.
Right, Louis Eriksson, Lucic. Yeah.
Okay, so if you just had to look back, what was the worst deal handed out on this free agency
Matt Murray.
In your mind? Matt Murray. Yeah,
probably.
But
now
he's RFA.
But they acquired him. They traded for him. And I laid out, which I thought was a decent argument, two things. You know, he could walk in a year. So you trade for a guy and he goes, okay, well, you're going to have to pay for unrestricted free agency. You're going to have to pay for my stats to get dummied in Ottawa. And you're going to have to pay a city tax that I'm going to have to live in Ottawa and play, you know, in an organization that is rebuilding. Like, to me, I think there were some layers.
I think
where
Josh Anderson, the same thing. I think the Anderson deal was a terrible deal for Montreal. But
see, but it's only 5.5. But, like, you know,
well,
it's
7 years, though, Noodles. I mean,
yeah, that takes him to 33. It's not like it took him to 43.
Like, but in both cases, okay, like, well,
what has he done that was worthy of a 7 year? He had one. I know you're going to say he scored 27. One, yes, he did 1 year. Yeah. He also, last year when he was playing, he was terrible. Like, he was awful when he played last year. I get it, shoulder surgery. Yeah, okay, but still, like, we can't apply some rules to some guys.
No, you're right.
Because we like this guy, it doesn't apply to him.
I think 7 year deals right now always come with that asterisk, unless it's McDavid, unless it's Matthews, and I think 7 and 8 year deals, they should have come out of the CBA. I think it should have been 5 max. That way, managers protect themselves from themselves.
I agree
owners
with that.
Protect.
I'd have more guys coming up more often, for sure.
You can't tell me. I mean, there is. Was it Brandon Tanev? Remember, he signed a 7-year deal?
6 or 7 at like 3.8
in
or something
at
like
3,
that.
Like, that one was a very unique one. Mm-hmm. Like, I can see the massive deals, but if you take years away, who cares what the number is if it works for your cap? Like, I just think the number 7 scares people. Like, that's a lifetime in hockey. And you're right. It should. So I you're right with Anderson. 7 scares. If it was a 6-year deal, you'd be like, nah. But 7 is a lifetime in today's world.
It is. And no, like, there really have not – there haven't been many examples of contracts that screamed at me over the last, you know, couple of weeks.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of them that burn out, right? Like, we know that. Like, maybe TJ Brody just doesn't fit and he's brutal, or not brutal, but just it doesn't work. And you're like, wow, they got him for another.
But that was a 4-year deal, right?
Yeah, I know. But still, in 2 years, we may be like, I can't believe they have him for 2 more years at 5, right? And Riley had to walk because they didn't have money left for him or whatever. You know, that's what I'm saying, is it could happen. Tanev in Calgary, if he keeps getting injured and everything, you're like, I can't believe we still got him for another couple of years. So we won't know it until we get there.
Right.
Same thing, you know, that's what I'm saying about Anderson.
I take him
on my team every day of the week. It's not that I don't like Josh Anderson as a player. It seems like, based on his career and what he's kind of done and what he did a year ago, I'm like, 7 years, 5.5. I was shocked that he got that. Well, I was shocked that he got it.
Didn't we have a situation like that here with Clarkson to some degree?
Yeah.
Where he had the one big year with Jersey and then...
Yeah, but he, you know, Clarkson was unrestricted. Like, that was a different, and Clarkson, wasn't there a lineup outside of, like, wasn't he a Newport guy? So I'm sure he's a new, like, there was a lineup. Like, wasn't Gino in the parking lot and like, oh, let's kick it over to Gino and here comes LA and here comes, you know, Stevie Yzerman's.
It was Toronto and Edmonton, by all accounts. Those were the final two teams. Yeah, and he was a UFA, so he probably had to pay a little bit more, which, again, speaks to the Anderson stuff. He was an RFA, but he was a year away from walking on you. He had leverage. You know, Anderson had leverage. And they like him as a player, and they committed to him, and that's fine. But what I'm saying is, I wouldn't be shocked if in 3 years we're like, wow, I can't believe Josh Anderson got 7 years at 5.5. Like, I wouldn't be shocked, because it kind of feels like Lucic, Erickson, Oposo.
The only difference I would disagree with that is Anderson, you see him skate. Like, you need to be able to skate in today's world, and he can fly.
He can
skate.
That's
the difference.
Yeah, but
like,
he's in that realm.
He would be one
of
the best skaters on the Leafs. I guarantee you. Like, that's a...
What does that have to do with...
What I'm saying is, skating in today's world is not...
Okay, then Kasperi Kapanen should get an 8-year deal at $15 million a year.
He's a great skater. What I'm saying is that... I just think when you talk about Lucic and Erickson and that, the one thing that has gone on those guys is the legs, right? That's the one thing. Anybody over 30, that's when we talk about John Tavares, what's the first thing you say? Boy, I'm worried about the last couple of years of that deal at $11
million. Yeah.
Why? Because the legs aren't going to be there. That's the one, like Duncan Keith at 37 at $5.5 million can still skate. That's right, the only thing that can save you.
We'll get into this more with Ray. Ray's coming up in 15. Jerry's percentages at 5:30. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Jerry's percentages at 5:30. I don't know if Jerry's going to be joining us today. We got to figure that out. Yeah, Jerry's, you know, last week, remember, he said he was going for Manny's and Petty's and mocktails and pina coladas and sorry,
maybe
not sorry.
Could you read out some questions of Jerry's?
Yeah, or? I think so. I think we can do that if we have to. I mean, he's leaving us hanging here. There's a bit of a cliffhanger here.
It's
with
tough.
Jerry. Yeah,
I was looking forward to it. And Jonas is always really good at Jerry's.
Yeah, very I was reviewing Jerry's. My answers from last week, and I think I can do a little better.
Yeah, don't ever do that. Like, don't ever do that.
I was like, 80% have been so
just
confident.
Just spit it out and go, Jonas.
Yeah,
forget
exactly.
It
that's what we do on this show is hot takes, and then we regret after. Go, you know what? Yeah, there's a lot of regret.
A lot of regret.
Case dismissed.
Case dismissed. So, exactly. Jerry, you know, we'll see what happens at 5:30. We'll get to some takes, but I don't know where Jerry's at. And Ray Ferraro's coming up, our TSN hockey analyst. Game 2 of the World Series tonight. Antonio Brown may be returning to the NFL. Ryan Fitzpatrick caught off guard in Miami. There's a lot to get into. Hour 2 up next, Overdrive continues, TSN 1050.